You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The music of tomorrow is being written today. The music of tomorrow is almost ready to play.
Experience the musicals of tomorrow today. Get a glimpse inside the blueprint of an original musical being developed in real time. With New York Theatre Barn's podcast, The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The music of tomorrow.
I'm Joe Barros.
And I'm Jen Sandler.
And we're the hosts of The Musicals of Tomorrow. As the artistic director and associate artistic director of New York Theatre Barn, we make space to speak in community with musical theatre writers and their creative teams.
Lifting up songs from original culture-shifting musicals in development and introducing them to a global audience has become a major part of New York Theatre Barn's evolving story.
Each original musical's intention, content, and journey are unique and extraordinary to the storytellers who create them. We believe that there is no formula for musical theatre except authenticity.
We recently spoke with the creators of An Incomplete List of All the Things I'm Going to Miss When the World Is No Longer, Dante Green and Lyle Hintz, and the writer of Garden of Starflowers, Masi Asari.
Our first musical is An Incomplete List of All the Things I'm Going to Miss When the World Is No Longer, which has book, music, and lyrics by Dante Green, and additional music and lyrics by Marley Gordon and Lyle Hintz.
Following a global announcement of the date and time Earth will be terminated, a community decides that the only reasonable thing to do is to gather together. An Incomplete List invites you into a glance at the last shit show ever, through a retrospective of cherished and tragic memories, to celebrate and mourn the delights and deceptions of the human experience.
And now, here's our conversation with the writers of An Incomplete List of All the Things I'm Going to Miss When the World Is No Longer, Dante Green and Lyle Hintz.
So welcome. We're excited to talk to you about your show. Dante, you are a writer and composer of the shows Johnny and Skid Go to the Moon and Levi's Big Leap. You're also a musical director and community organizer, and you're the founding artistic director of the Makers Ensemble, which is awesome. Your work has been seen at Ars Nova, the Public Theater, Pig Iron Theater Company, Fringe Arts, the Wilma Theater, and the Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival. Lyle, you are a true multi-hyphenate artist that seems to have his hand in many theatrical pots. You're a writer, visual media designer, and director. Your work has been presented with the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, Philadelphia Fringe Festival, Painted Bride Art Center, and Interact Theater Company. Your work has also been nominated for the Barrymore Award for Media Design. So, Dante and Lyle, what inspired you to tell this dystopian end-of-the-world story, and why have you chosen to make the action celebratory in the wake of destruction?
So when Lyle and I first started talking about this show, it sort of came out of inspiration from a different play called When the Rain Stops Falling by Andrew Bovell. And it premiered at the Wilma Theater a couple years ago. And after seeing that show, I was just so obsessed with the ideas that the show was talking about, which were climate change and also this multi-generational family and how their family struggles sort of mapped onto the climate change issue that was happening in the world of this play. And so Lyle and I started to have a lot of conversations about these ideas of climate change. And also a conspiracy theory started to get roped into there, because I think conspiracy theories always come up when we start talking about like what's going to happen at the end of the world. Yeah, from there, we really started sort of like putting together this piece that was sort of very from a place of home and from a place of community. But it also was during, you know, the first year of the Trump presidency, and there was a lot of stuff going on in the world that just didn't really feel great. But what felt really great was getting into a room together and like making stuff together. And so I think that's why we decided to focus on the celebration a little bit more, because we really needed each other to be celebrating in order to make the thing happen, if that makes sense.
Of course. And I think that's how we got to where we are now. I think it was us all realizing what went wrong, and we had to be together to make it right.
Absolutely.
So how did you two end up collaborating together?
Yeah, so Lyle and I actually met when we were in high school. I think I was actually in middle school at the time, and Lyle was in his first year in high school. And we were sort of, you know, we were really into the musicals. We were really into the singing competitions in high school. And our artistic journey sort of stayed really tightly knit over the following years. And we ended up both going to school together in Philadelphia. And, you know, from there, once we were both in college, we were really just, the magic started happening, you know, we were mm-hmm. in a band together as well. And I think that's where, you know, the music that we had collaborated on in this musical in particular is actually music that is from when we were in a band together that actually like made its way into this show. And so our collaboration has definitely been like multifaceted and is always, you know, expanding.
It was interesting. We knew each other in high school. We both moved to Philly, but we went to separate universities. Mm-hmm. So our collaboration when we were in school was basically outside of our time in college. So like, yeah. I wasn't ever in a class with Dante, but we did hang out afterwards and figure like, hey, let's throw our in the Fringe Festival. Might as right. well do that.
So might as well. I think,
yeah, our collaboration was kind of like another thing that we could do, like an extracurricular of sorts, but we forced it upon ourselves.
Absolutely.
What I'm also getting from your show is that there's this essence of we need to celebrate and explore the destruction in order to repair a lot of the damage. And if right. it sort of, it's like, if we survive, we'll be changed. If we don't, mm-hmm. it'll be a great party.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah. I feel like also that was like everybody right before the pandemic too. It was like, let's get our party in. And then like, mm-hmm. we're all going to go away for who knows how long. And like, coming out of it, you know, I'm sure we'll probably see something very similar.
I think so. So Lyle, we said in the beginning that you're a writer, you're a designer. How did that add to this collaboration? Because I know you didn't just give material to the show. You gave more than that. You gave a design.
Yeah. My contribution to the show was mainly like collaborating on music. And that music was then used in the show by Dante. And then I helped fill in some gaps that needed a little magic. And also the first production of the show was alongside a play of mine in the Fringe Festival. And that was like just kind of a big thing that we did together. I think it was the same production team, different casts, but very separate. But then the next time when we did Incomplete List, I think I was the projection designer / set designer / like I said, just helping out. That was really where I like dove into the piece and got to like kind of learn what it was about. Because it's about a lot of stuff, and it's vague. It's vague in the right places.
Yeah.
Well, I showed my students today of Laura performing Here Again, the second song, and then I played them part of the more produced, orchestrated sort of techno version of the song, and they were fighting over which one they liked better. It was a lot.
I love that. Well, that was sort of the great thing when we asked Laura to do these songs as well, is like, yes. I sort of left it open to her to be able to cover them in a way if she wanted to, but also if she wanted to use the actual fully produced track, she was more than welcome to as well. And I think what she came up with ended up being something that actually has expanded the possibilities of the musical for me. She's created these versions of songs that I have never even thought of before. It's really exciting.
Well, with all that said, tell us about our first song that'll be performed by Laura Galindo, Back to Me.
Yeah, so the first song, Back to Me, is it's sort of a memory song. It exists both in the past and in the present. And the song is sung by a character named Karina in the show. And she has recently lost someone who she loves very much, who has actually gone missing. And so this song sort of reminisces on like the memories that they had together while also questioning when he will be returning and when he will be coming back.
So this is Back to Me.
Whenever you're ready.
I can't be sure by the
another life, or maybe yesterday, but either way, I need to. Will you come back to me? 'Cause nothing matches the sky as the smoke turns the city gray. And are you okay? I just had so much more to say. I've seen it all. I take it back. I know I haven't seen anything. But when I fall back to sleep tonight, I'll close my eyes. I'll see everything, and everything will be real. What's the deal with you anyway? Oh, and when are you coming over? Oh, please don't keep me waiting. I'm only getting older.
I feel like that's haunting. That's so many things, that song.
Oh, thank you. I love hearing Laura's version of it as well. It's so crazy how different it is from the actual version of the song.
So tell us more about the development of your show. I feel like it's been in a lot of really awesome places so far.
Yeah, so as Lyle said, the show sort of started off at the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, and we were actually in rep together. Lyle was performing an original play of his called Simone RPT 8, and we were doing an incomplete list. And at the time, it was a play, with music, and it felt very immediate to make happen. Like, the show had just been written probably that January through like April, and like me and Lyle were like, the Fringe Festival deadline is coming up, let's make it happen. And it really, what it wanted to be was a workshop, but what it ended up being was this like sold out like weekend of just like everyone, like the university coming together and like supporting each other. And it was a very beautiful experience. And from there, our hometown Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble asked us to then bring the show to them that summer. And so we brought the show to them about a year later. And then after that, it went into more development. The University of the Arts, which is the school that I went to, developed it through a week workshop. We then took it to a musical festival called Polyphone, where it performed at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia. And then after that, it went to AntFest at Ars Nova.
And this show, when I first got sent it, I was like, this is an Ars Nova show. And I saw it. Had been at Ars Nova, and I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Ars Nova, and the AntFest was like sort of perfect for it too, because it was like, you know, you only get one night and you just got to throw it all together, and it's just one big party, and it was perfect.
Tell us about the song Here Again.
Yeah, so Here Again happens sort of at the, like, I don't want to call it the climax of the piece, but it's sort of like the grand release of the piece, where the characters in the show have sort of gone through this experience together that involves some drugs. And now they're coming down, and the song sort of talks about, if I had the chance to do anything over in this life, I wouldn't do a thing about it. So yeah, let's hear it again.
I could have done something better with my time, but I was here. Walking with a closeness, looking for the unknown. I could have planned a little better on my part, but I had no plan, and now I'm here again. I could have done something better with my time. Better is an opinion. Traipsing my way up and down, be standing around. I could have planned a little better on my part, but I had no plans, and now
maths on a finger on a screen.
It's just like I'm a big fan of Laura Galindo, and I'm so happy to be collaborators with her.
I listened to her like demo cut of it, and a lot, several times over, and then it was kind of. Then I get to hear another version when she was playing it live, which was great to hear.
Yeah.
The song is so deliciously melodic too. When you hear that hook, who'd have guessed it would bring me back to this? Reminds me of like the first time I heard like Jason Mraz.
I love Jason Mraz.
All right. Well, Dante and Lyle, thank you so much. We can't wait to hear more from an incomplete list of all the things I'm going to miss when the world is no longer.
Awesome. Thank you.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Our second new musical is Garden of Starflowers, which has book music and lyrics by Masi Asari.
It's 2075, a metropolis in a dystopian world where humans spend most of their time in survival pods taking shelter from an overheated planet. Plugged into virtual realities, they rarely venture out in person, except for organized mass entertainment events held under a shimmering festival dome. But Lucy, a misfit, has dreams of persuading flowers to grow in the scorched ground outside her pod. When Oscar catches a glimpse of her gardening on surveillance footage, he's convinced she's the incarnation of Angeline, a digital pop star he stands in virtual reality, and sets out to meet her. Meanwhile, preparations are underway for Angeline's first holographic concert in the dome. But there are glitches in the digital star's programming, as she seems to manifest her own will and emotions. Oscar introduces a reluctant Lucy to the festival scene, where she comes face to face with the virtual star who, uncannily, looks exactly like her. And then, Angeline herself begins to have ideas about her purpose in the world, her connection to Lucy, and the dream of a real-life Garden of Starflowers. And now, here's our conversation with the writer of Garden of Starflowers, Mossy Asari.
Hello, hello.
Well, hello. That synopsis makes you want to just see the show right away.
Thank you. Thank you. There is definitely a skill to writing synopses that we all have to hone along with all the other skills. But thank you for reading all of it. I know it was long.
Yeah, it really paints a beautiful picture. And the songs really evoke that spirit as well. So I'm excited for everyone to hear those. Mossy, you are a celebrated composer, lyricist, and playwright. You're best known as a co-writer of the London-bound musical adaptation of Monsoon Wedding. Your other work includes The Family Resemblance, Sympathy Jones, and Mirror of Most Values. Your visionary work has been seen and developed with the Eugene O'Neill Center, Live and in Color, and New York Musical Festival, among others. You're a winner of the Billy Burke Ziegfeld Award for Women Composers of Musicals, and you received awards from the O'Neill, a Theater Hall of Fame Emerging Artist Grant, and the Stacey Mindich Go Write a Musical Lily Award. You're also on the advisory board of Maestra, an organization we love, and on the theater faculty of Northwestern University. So what sparked in you to tell this layered dystopian story?
Yeah, sure. And I do want to say thank you to Stacey Mindich and the Lily Awards who supported this project. This is the musical that they've commissioned that I'm currently working on. So what sparked it? I was teaching a class at Northwestern here in Chicago. I was teaching a class on vocal sound and race. I asked the students to make these curated playlists that were related to the readings that we were doing. And one student presented on the digital avatar Instagram influencer, Michaela, also known as Lil Michaela. I don't know. I had not heard of her, and it fascinated me. She made waves in May 2020 when she signed with the agency CAA as a CGI influencer. So like, she's not actually a person. She's like a designed image of a person that is an Instagram influencer and has like all these stories. Like, she broke up with her boyfriend. So I was really struck by this, especially the fact that she was like deliberately racially ambiguous. I think she's meant to be like Brazilian American. I was struck by that. And I thought, well, what about the people who actually look like her? Like, what if you woke up one day and found out that someone who looked like you was a digital celebrity? You know, our faces and our skin tones as racially mixed people are not just sort of there to be kind of traded and sold. And also this idea that like people want to consume content about certain kinds of racialized people, but only when those personas can be like really carefully controlled. You know, it's like the ultimate ideal celebrity from a corporate side, because you can make her say or do whatever you want. Like, we could say a lot about gender with that too. So those were some of the things that got me started. And then I really, you know, during the pandemic, there's something about this idea of people being isolated, obviously, in our pods. But there's something about the dystopian world we're living in right now that feels related to the dystopia of a planet ruined by climate change and not too far ahead of us. And so I think those things kind of overlay. This is a long answer to your question, but so those were some of the things.
Well, it's perfect because it kind of segues to my next question. You know, we feel 2075, it's far off. Is it far? Were you cognizant of that when you wrote this show, or was all everything you wrote about purely coincidental that it kind of mirrors now?
Well, I really started really writing more in earnest on this during the pandemic. So I think that's very much part of the fabric of it. I had kind of the working concept, but it got really rooted. But I think there's a lot of reasons that so many of us like started growing plants from like, you know, scallion clippings or like lettuce, you know, or like I never grow plants. And here I have like geraniums I'm trying to grow on the windowsill. So I feel like we all want to feel that there's still something of life and something of hope in our world. And so I think that's definitely part of it.
Well, I mentioned that the show was recipient of the Stacey Mindich Go Write a Musical Lily Award. And you also acknowledged that the Lily Awards recognize extraordinary women in the theater. Other recipients have been our friend Kirsten Childs and Emily Gardner Shue Hall. What's it been like to receive this award and to have been chosen to do this project?
It's really, I'm so honored. I have to say, I feel like there have been so many women who have been opening doors for me in my career. The Ziegfeld Award as well, which, you know, these are new awards, you know, if no one had taken the initiative to create them, you know, I was the first recipient of the Ziegfeld, the second recipient of this Lily Award. There are so many things that I've gotten that just didn't exist. And I really feel grateful, because there have been times when I felt like leaving this business or felt like, is there a place for me here? And, you know, the support of organizations like the Lily Awards, and this amazing award that Stacey Mindich has funded have, have encouraged me to feel like, oh, I do have something to contribute. You know, this field, you know, can be welcoming of something that I have to say and I have to write. So I'm very, very grateful.
And if people don't know Stacey, she's best known as the lead producer of Dear Evan Hansen, but she works with Lincoln Center. She works with so many different great organizations. And I think she champions a lot of different organizations and groups of people, young people, women seem to be what she cares about the most. And it's something I think is really important.
Let's dive into the show. Tell us about the first song tonight.
So it's early in the show. This is like the third number. And Oscar, he or they, is obsessed with this virtual pop star named Angeline. And Oscar sees this person on surveillance footage that they think is her. And of course, spoiler, it's not. It's Lucy working in her aspirational garden. But Oscar goes and tracks her down in real life, and this song happens. It sounds a little stalkery, but they're really just genuinely excited to see her and like a super, super fan. And the world sucks, like it does now, and they want to live in a fantasy land with this pop star who they actually kind of want to be, and who doesn't want to be a glamorous virtual holographic pop star. So Oscar starts the song at some distance from Lucy and then works up the nerve to go sing directly to her. So there's kind of like a little bit of a progression in the song. And Jamie Sapero sings it very, very beautifully. I'm excited for you all to hear it.
So here is Angeline.
Angeline, is it really you? Angeline, next to me. Angeline, picture perfect on a screen and in the flesh. How you make the world shine like new, Angeline. What do I even say to her? I don't mean to intrude on you, Angeline. No, not me, oh my queen. Half delusion, half machine. I'm such a fan. How you make the world shine like new, Angeline. Even in a desert, you are dazzling. Trust me, you could never hide that glow. Dust and grime can't cover up perfection, Angeline. No, no, no. Going in. Excuse me, Angeline. Oh, it's really you, Angeline. Hey, it's me, music fiend. 7,000,017. Just me offline. God, you make real life shine like new, Angeline. I saw you on the surveillance feed and I had to track you here. I know I never leave my pod, but so did I win? Is this the inner circle? Oh my God, is this the Iridium level? Are you gonna do a secret concert? I cannot believe this is happening, it's so crazy. I have crossed the planet for you, Angeline. Even in a desert, you are dazzling. Sparkle in a world so cold and gray. Rainbow colors dancing in this wasteland, Angeline, that's your way. Angeline, is it really you, Angeline? Next to me, Angeline, picture perfect on a screen. And in the flesh, how you make the world shine like new. Wish it I could shine like you do. I have crossed the desert for you, Angela.
And then the song cuts off because Lucy finally gets his attention to tell him that she's not who he thinks that she is.
I love how you kept it in context. So cool. You didn't make the cast album version.
No.
Awesome. That was super cool. Well, tell us about the second song, which is going to be performed by Isabel McCalla.
Yes. So Oscar learns, of course, that Lucy is not the human incarnation of the digital pop star. And she's kind of like living off the grid. Like she's kind of this hippie. Like she's not into this whole let's live an extended reality life. But he convinces her to go with him to the Festival Dome, right? So people really stay in their pods, except they go out for these giant, you know, festivals, Coachella-like festivals right under this dome. So he convinces her to come with him. It's a couple of scenes after the number we've just heard, and it's the duet between the two main female roles. It's the first time they meet. So it's two people who happen to look identical. Angeline, the digital pop star, and Lucy, who's a regular person, right, who just has learned that there's someone who looks exactly like her and is not a human. I guess it's important to know that this is the first time the two come face to face. Angeline is going kind of rogue, right? Like she's starting to come into her own awareness as a kind of holographic AI being. So she's running a camouflaging protocol. So her programmers have lost control of her and can't see where she is or, you know, what she's doing or saying during the song.
And this has all happened without her knowing that someone has her face.
Correct. This is the first time both of them sort of encounter that reality.
So here is One Like You.
Are you one of the people who take shelter from the planet in their pods? Or are you one of us? We sing and dance for them. They treat us like we're gods. Which kind are you?
Human.
I've never seen one like you before. You have my face. Is that a thing they can do? What for? What is this place? Here in the safety of filtered air, no wind, no rain, they wear their visors and
outside the dome? All I've seen of the world is where I live. The ground is hard, it's hot and dry, but at night there are stars and sometimes wind, a dusty creek that rustles by. Nothing like this. I've never seen one like you before. You have my face. Is that a thing they can do? What for? What is this place?
Under the span of a makeshift sky, dancing in bliss, so convinced they're awake, while I want more than this. More than synthetic feelings, a mirage is never true. I want what's real. Who am I even talking to? I never dreamed that I would meet one like you. What are you made of, air? Show me the world out there. I never dreamed, or do I dream? I never dreamed that I would meet one like you.
Didn't she do a great job?
The minute you told me you wanted someone to play two people, I'm like, Izzy McCalla, hands down. This is in her wheelhouse in so many levels.
Yeah, we had like one Zoom conversation and she was just like delivered, you know, the story so specifically. It's kind of amazing. For the first time I'm hearing it not sung by me at the piano. It's amazing.
Awesome. Well, I also loved her in The Prom on Broadway and I love that she did this. It was really wonderful.
Me too.
One last question for you.
Yeah. Yes. Your show, as we've been saying, it roots in this today, but also futuristic time. How do you see it growing? Do you see it being a piece that lives on stage forever? Do you see it being more of a multi-hybrid kind of digital medium as well, versus just being a show?
Well, it's a great question. And I think all of us right now are considering, like, what are all the different ways that my piece can live? But I do feel like this can be so exciting on stage. I think the holographic performance can be done. You look at all, I mean, obviously there's a holographic pop star in Japan. Tupac is performing at Coachella, and there's like kind of amazing, there's just amazing holographic performances. I think it can be really exciting on stage, and I hope we get to see it that way sometime. It's a small cast, you know, it's six characters and one of them's a hologram. So I really hope it can happen.
So it's five actors, excluding the hologram, yeah. But then six, wow.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like, so part of the story, that a couple of the other characters, there's a programmer, there's an assassin who gets on Lucy's trail because it's just inconvenient that there's this person who looks like the pop star. So there's an assassin who comes in late in the show. And then there's the singer who's contracted her voice banks to this pop star and wants a bigger cut. So there's also this idea that like the character is going to look like the hologram will look like another actor in the show and will sound like a third actor in the show. So I think I'm excited for what it could be.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for sharing us this first glimpse of this very new show. We can't wait to see how it grows and becomes a beautiful garden of star flowers.
Absolutely. And we can't wait to see who else gets a Stacey Mindich commission, because her work is important and the people she champions, we want to champion.
Yes. Thank you, Stacey and the Lily Wards and Lyra DeBessene. And thank you both for inviting me. I was nervous about doing this, but I really appreciated the deadline and the chance to share the work. So thank you.
Thank you. We're really excited about your work.
Stay warm. We'll see you soon.
If you enjoy The Musicals of Tomorrow, please rate, subscribe, and share. The podcast is co-produced and edited by Paul Mox and Hector Flores Jr. Our theme song, The Music of Tomorrow, was written by Lynn Schenkel and Sarah Cooper for their all-female identifying musical, Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls. Join us next time for more of The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.